Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. Annie Lennox. I saved the world today. Well, not me, really. But it could apply to our guest, whose music selection that was. At least, that's what I'm told his wife says. It's Francis Sullivan, recently appointed as chief executive of the Catholic Church's Truth, Justice and Healing Council, set up in response to the Royal Commission into Child Sex Abuse. Francis Sullivan, welcome to Sunday Night.
Thank you, John.
Your wife must have a very high or a very cynical view of you.
She's just realistic. She knows what I'm like.
Tell us first about the council, because in the past week or so, the church has once again been in the news. A few weeks ago it was Melbourne, now it's Newcastle, and of course the overall of this is the Royal Commission. Your specific brief is the Royal Commission, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct, yes. Look, when the Royal Commission was announced, the church leadership, and for your listeners, all the bishops, all the congregational leaders, that's 189 congregations, over 30 dioceses, that's the Catholic Church leadership. And they said they fully embrace the Royal Commission and will cooperate with it in every way possible and in every way asked. But for the Royal Commission to relate to the Catholic Church, they need some type of coordinating entity, thus the council. And our job is to coordinate information into the Royal Commission, to make sure that the legal representation is a whole of church representation, the policies and the submission are endorsed by the church, so that the commission knows, as good as it gets, this is the mind of the Catholic Church.
So your council operates under the bishops' committee, does it, the bishops' conference?
It operates under a combined committee of the bishops' conference and the religious leaders, like the various congregations of sisters and congregations of brothers and male religious, like the Jesuits and so on.
Right. So this is an attempt to bring the whole lot together under one roof. If you are reporting to anybody within the church structure, who is it or what is it that you, your group, reports to?
Well, put it this way, I'm hired and fired by the church leadership, and they formed a supervisory group. Right. Nice title. And it comprises the archbishops and three senior religious leaders. And they are, in a sense, overseeing the work of the council on behalf of the rest.
Mm. And as far as they're concerned, what is the remit that they've given to you?
They firstly have asked us to coordinate and manage the church's response to the Royal Commission. So in the early days of that, it means that the Royal Commission will send out notices for documents. It's over to us to help the Royal Commission identify where those documents are. We collect them. We put them into the commission.
Let me ask an intervening question. When you say coordinate the church's response, some people, and it's been commented on the press, could say, look, that's wide open for interpretation. That could mean act as a shield of the church.
Sure.
Or it could mean act as a filter for the church in a softer way, or it could mean act as a conduit, which is implied, you know, whatever is asked for shall be given. Is there any sense of balance or discussion about that? What's your clear understanding of that?
We are a conduit. The church leadership said they're cooperating fully, openly and transparently. That's our brief. And there's no spin here. This isn't a time for the church to get cute about how to relate to a royal commission. I mean, governments don't call royal commissions lightly. And we realise that the history of the Catholic Church is very much part of this royal commission. It's not the only outfit that'll be examined. We know that, government agencies, other institutions, other churches. But, you know, our history is confronting and shameful in the past. There are also aspects of it that are much better, and we want to tell the full story. The only way you're going to tell a story and be heard is by showing that you're sincere and open.
I don't want to get into the legal weeds here, but let's just take one example. Say you've got an example where, for whatever reasons, and they may be good reasons, maybe you can't know, a bishop or an employee of the church says, no, I'm not going to provide you with that documentation because it may, I don't know, be self-incriminating or it may give the wrong spin on events. I'm just not going to provide it to you. Now, what's your role in that? Can you actually demand it of them? I mean, how does that work? You clearly have no legal remit to demand it, but you have the church's law on your side, I guess.
Well, we have the church's moral authority from the leadership.
Yeah.
The leadership's made it clear that we're going to fully cooperate and comply with any requests from the Royal Commission. It'd be a very brave employee to say otherwise.
Our guest on Sunday night is Francis Sullivan, recently appointed as Chief Executive of the Truth, Justice and Healing Council, coordinating the Catholic Church's response to the Royal Commission. Who are the members of your council, Francis?
Well, it's chaired by a former Supreme Court judge here in New South Wales, Barry O'Keefe. And then we have a series of people on the council who are coming with various expertise. And that's the point. We're going to provide independent advice back into the church leadership. So that expertise covers child welfare and child protection, psychiatry, particularly child and youth psychiatry expertise, people in the areas of mental health. And as I've said in other places, four people on the council have either had a personal experience of abuse or members in their direct family. And so they're coming with real experience of the trauma. And that's particularly important because this Royal Commission is first and foremost about people who have been damaged, people who have been abused. This is an opportunity for them not only to tell their story, but for our justice system and for our governments to start putting in place something that is about justice, and then it's over to all of us to put in place something about healing.
Let's talk a little for a moment about yourself. What do you bring to this task? You're the full-time person. You're the one who's going to cop most of it. The rest of your council are people you pull in when you need their authority or when you need their advice, but you've got to carry the load. Talk for a moment about your office, and then we'll talk about what you bring to it. Do you have an office and a staff?
Yes, we do. Yes, we have an office in Canberra, and in that office we have people with legal expertise, plus communication expertise and policy-making expertise. Now, we're not a massive bureaucracy. You know, that we're numbering about seven at the moment. And the whole point of that is that it's, as these days we say, we're a flexible workplace.
So if somebody in your office rings up a diocese somewhere, I don't know, yeah, wherever, Wilcannia or somewhere like that, and says, you've got documents that we want. They relate to an institution that ran in your diocese 30 years ago. Please produce the documents and send them to us. And you have the imprimatur to do that.
Yes, the way it actually does work is that the Royal Commission sends a formal notice to produce documents. It'll be earmarked to a particular area or a particular institution inside the Catholic Church. We flag that with the institution, tell them the notice is coming, then they need to produce all the documents that comply with that notice. We help them do that, but then the documents themselves don't actually come to our office. We don't want anyone thinking the documents take a circuitous route. They actually go through our formal national solicitors, Gilbert and Tobin, and then they are produced to the Royal Commission in the format agreed by the Royal Commission.
Is there any preemptive work on your part? Would, for example, you be saying to diocese, get your house in order. We want ready access to whatever documents you have, and you actually need to be, if you're having difficulties, you don't know where records are, you better find them. And do you have that role internally as well?
Yes, John, it's interesting because this whole process has been a learning experience for all of us. So when the Royal Commission was announced, we put out a very brief memo saying, look, you know, it's a good idea to make sure you know where all your documents are, make sure you've got copies of them, and be ready if you get a notice. Now, we've had about 30 notices into the Catholic Church in various ways since the start of the Royal Commission. They vary in scope and magnitude. But once a notice is produced, then the diocese or the institutions or school system that's involved are given time to identify, I think the technical term is called discover, the documents. They are then put into a proper document management system, and off it goes. So yes, we've given people a sense of get ready, because you know the Royal Commission can't wait forever, and so there is a lot of preparatory work being done by a lot of people.
Yes, and that's decentralised, but ultimately filters through you.
If they get a notice, yes.
Yeah. We've seen inquiries in the Catholic Church elsewhere in the world. I've already mentioned that the issues in America and Europe and Ireland. To what extent are you able to take advantage of some of the findings that have come out of those commissions, particularly in Ireland, for example, where you've had a fairly sort of transparent and robust discussion coming out about this?
Well, it's not so much the findings, John, but it's the processes I think you can learn from. I mean, I believe the Catholic leadership here are very clear about the fact that a full and open embrace of the Royal Commission here hopefully will make sure that any of the logistical problems that happened at the beginning of the Irish Royal Commissions won't happen. Secondly, that particularly in the United States, the Catholic bishops of the United States commissioned very intense, ongoing research into, you know, the causes around what they, or the factors that may have led to this whole phenomenon, and have come up with major reports. And those reports we're looking at, and hopefully we can also produce some of that material in an educative way for the Royal Commission. That's the best we're taking out of them at the moment.
I talk a little later about the victims and where you see them relating to your process, because essentially your process is an internal process, but it's got to fit with them as well. We'll talk about that a little later. Mm-hmm. Just sticking on this, your own structural stuff for the moment, you've got a history, you're seen as somebody who's knocked around the Catholic Church for a while. What particular strengths do you think you bring to this job?
Well, I'm one of those rare people who understand the structure of the Catholic Church. That's a good start. Because like I said, it's not a monolithic organisation. It can appear that way. So, and you know, for about 14 years I ran Catholic Health Australia, which is the big representative body of the hospitals, the nursing homes and so on. So I got to know people, and I'm a practicing Catholic. I sort of get the gig and committed to it, and, you know, that helps. I know people in the show and, in a sense, have a good working relationship with them. And, you know, when you really look at these things from a practical point of view, they're probably important assets. I'm no one particular after that. It's just I was around at the time and got asked to do the job.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. Our guest on Sunday Night is Francis Sullivan, recently appointed Chief Executive of the Truth, Justice and Healing Council of the Catholic Church in Australia, set up in response to the Royal Commission, which has begun its work. Let's have a little music, Francis. Meditation from Sais.
It's a beautiful piece, and something that is very dear to our heart and our house. And again, my wife, who's a great influence on us all, has said to my son, make sure you know how to play this. I want it played at my funeral. It's a beautiful piece.
Music selected by our guest, Francis Sullivan, Chief Executive of the Truth, Justice and Healing Council of the Catholic Church. Francis, let's talk about the way this is now working in practice. We've got some idea of what it is and what its desired role should be. The Royal Commission has started its work. It's taken private submissions. Public hearings are about to begin, but there's also been two other inquiries going on, a parliamentary inquiry in Victoria and an inquiry in New South Wales, also set up by the government. Do you relate in any way as yet to those other two inquiries going on?
No, we don't relate to them at all. I know that both those inquiries, I gather, are cooperating in some way with the Royal Commission, but I'm not sure in what way. And clearly those inquiries have raised lots of issues in the public domain, again, about the history of the Catholic Church.
But even though you're not officially connected, you, as a chief executive, would have to be keeping an eye on that and thinking, hang on, you know, is the odd document going to be needed here? Is that telling me something about what I need to know or how I need to approach my job? Are you keeping across both of those?
Well, I'm obviously watching it, but not particularly intensely. I mean, at the end of the day, the inquiry in New South Wales is about a particular matter, and it'll be well aired. And I gather the documents would be available to the Royal Commission, so it will come as no surprise to us. The Victorian Parliamentary Inquiry is a different kettle of fish altogether. That's a parliamentary inquiry that has a different set of rules and had a different sort of procedural arrangement than what will be the case in the Royal Commission. But again, you know, it was well aired.
The Catholic Diocese in Melbourne, though, clearly had its own views about that commission, and the legal representatives of the Catholic Diocese, the Archdiocese in Melbourne, took a very strong potshot at the quality of the police submission to that inquiry just last week. Do you have a view on that? Is it expected that you would inform a view and say, better watch out on that? This is something that we need. Are you across the documents that have been shuffled across the table there? You're aware of the police submission and what it said?
I'm only aware of the transcripts that were put on the website. I haven't been an operative inside any of those arrangements. That was specifically handled by people locally. And I noticed the news reports like everybody else, and I think it'll be interesting to see what the findings of that inquiry deliver sometime in September, I think.
And it's when those findings come out, they will inform your position and you will respond to the Royal Commission. What I'm really getting to is there's no sense in which you are developing cases and issues yourself. What you do is an act of response to the Commission specifically.
Yeah, so I can help you there. We are in the first stage, which is document discovery on behalf of the requests from the Royal Commission. So the documents go in. Obviously, when we see our documents, we also need to examine them to see what they're saying, because, you know, you would be a mug not to read the documents you've sent into a Royal Commission. But equally, the Victorian Inquiry, or the Canine Inquiry as it's called here, will have findings, and I imagine the Royal Commission will be interested in examining those. We may not necessarily see any of those documents until maybe they come up in a hearing, but we in time will be asked by the Royal Commission to supply witnesses, we'll be asked to put in submissions and attend for various hearings, and we'll have to do our homework on that.
Have you been asked for things thus far? You alluded earlier to several documents you've been asked.
There are 30 notices to produce. Now, for example, one of the first was for the Archdiocese of Brisbane. Now, that's a very big geographic area, and it was for all Catholic institutions in that geographic area that have documents related to an allegation of child sex abuse.
And how far back in time?
Went back to 1970, 71, I think, that one. And so, you know, that's been an extensive and intense process, and that's been replicated in a number of other geographic areas. And since then, some of the notices from the Royal Commission have been more narrowly defined. It might be about a particular incident that's already been in the public sphere, and some of the incidences have already been through the courts. And that makes sense, because the Royal Commission has sort of two roles here, and I think your listeners will be interested. What is presently going on is a series of private hearings. That's where individuals can go forward and tell their story, and it's important to anybody listening tonight, to be honest, if they are wondering whether they should get in contact with the Royal Commission and talk about it.
Not get in contact with you, but get in contact with the Royal Commission.
Well, I think it's probably important for people to feel that they can go directly to the Royal Commission. I mean, some people feel a bit odd about sort of dealing with the Catholic Church at the moment on these matters, so I don't want to make it feel like you've got to come through us. But my point is that those sessions will provide people with support as well. And, you know, this is a time for people to tell the Commission about their past. And it's important for some people. Other people choose not to. But during those sessions, individuals tell their story. They give information. And clearly the Commission needs that. At some point, maybe around October, there are going to be public hearings. That's when institutions like the Catholic Church are going to come forward and describe how they've handled allegations. And that's at the heart of the Royal Commission's brief. When you read the title even, it's how the institutions handled things. And it obviously goes to questions of mishandling as well as handling. And the documents will be part of that process because that will provide information to the commissioners.
One of the criticisms of the way the church has handled things in the past has it has been too legalistic and adversarial. So in the past, where matters have been dealt with, there has been a tendency at some point in the process to think, what is my obligation to protect the church here?
Sure.
Are there still elements of that in the church? And what is the relationship of your body philosophically, or, you know, it's sort of philosophically, I guess the right word, to that sort of... it's a genuine difficulty for some people. The secular world might say that as an absurdity, but there are, nevertheless, priests and good Catholic lay people who feel very deeply that the church is an institution which they owe something to.
I have met the church leaders and they've looked me in the face and made it abundantly clear that they're all about, as one, getting a zero tolerance approach to this in the Catholic Church. There's no nuancing about the image of the church. We've also heard from church leadership when they've gone to other inquiries that they have openly said, yes, in the past, the administrators put the interests of the church first on occasion, and that is a feature of the past. When you say to me, are there elements of it now? I haven't seen that. I certainly know, though, that, you know, many in the Catholic community, many religious, many priests and clergy feel very deeply about the image of the church, because it has been shameful. And, you know, it's a soft word, but it's also embarrassing. And that's why people want a concerted approach and embrace of the processes of the Royal Commission, so the truth will be revealed.
Let's talk a bit then now personally about yourself. You mentioned earlier that you spent years as the chief executive of Catholic Health Australia, one of the biggest church agencies, that you are a practicing Catholic. Where did you grow up and how did you sort of become a child of the church? Is it a generational thing? Cultural Catholic? What's the story of Francis Sullivan?
I knew you'd ask these questions. I'm not keen on the story of Francis Sullivan. I'm much keener on what the job's about. But, I grew up in Perth in Western Australia in a classic Catholic family. Have fortunate enough to have a really great family. Have always been interested in, you know, social contribution, whether it's from the early days of your own Catholic education or whatever. Basically, I started off as a Catholic school teacher. My wife and I, we had one daughter at the time. We went away and did our studies in the United States, did a master's degree. Mine was in theological ethics, and came back and thought I'd teach adults, and typically no one wants to know some smart aleck with a master's degree in those days. So moved on into social policy and political advice with the then Minister for Health in WA. And when that job was over very abruptly after one election, went to Canberra for working with the Catholic Hospital Group. And basically it's a story like anybody else's, really. You know, you take your opportunities and...
Yeah, but occasionally you get a story which at the moment arrives and you say, this is the moment I'm best equipped for. And with that background in theological ethics and in politics and in administration, It's a pretty good resume for a job like this.
Yes, no, I totally agree. That's probably not a bad background. And, you know, being a typical Catholic, I sort of can't say no, really. I did take a while to say yes to this one because it was a pretty intense sort of issue. But ultimately, I know that my engagement with the Catholic Church has done a lot for me. And I've been a very fortunate person in that regard. And it sounds a bit cute, but it's when you're asked to put something back in at an important time, I thought, well, yes, I'll give it a go.
Mm. And it's a bit of a cleansing of the stables moment, I think. I guess you've got a new pope in the church.
Great name,
Francis.
Too. Yeah, fantastic. And,
well, I hope you've been in sort of close and intimate communication already.
Only three tweets.
But it is interesting that it's at a moment that that could provide as much of an opportunity as it does a negative moment.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's really great in a way. I get a little bit excited about the current pope. I think the things he's been saying are really attractive, and he's saying that, you know, the church needs to reach out and to risk getting involved in the messiness of life and to build bridges, not walls. Fantastic comments like that, that we need to relate to the poverty, not only, I think, just economic poverty, but the sense of impoverishment a lot of people have about their life, and particularly in this area when people who have been damaged, of course, feel extraordinarily bereft, sometimes isolated, and in many cases very unresolved. And the church, as I said earlier, this is, you know, we're not Catholic Church Inc. here. You know, we're meant to be a faith community. The bona fides of a church are about how we reach out and how we express compassion. And that's the, if you like, heart of the church that needs to have its voice during this Royal Commission. And we're not a top legal firm here negotiating these things, as you said, in a very legalistic way. That's not the gig. This is about a narrative amongst the community, which hopefully will lead to justice and healing for people.
And a transformative exercise for the church, potentially.
Correct. Oh, yes, of course. I mean, you can't expect to just name the history. You have to allow that history to teach us what change is required, and that in itself starts a process of reconciliation.
I don't want to take us off on another tangent completely, but that capacity for the change to soak in to the system is very much contingent on, in the Catholic structure particularly, on the sort of leadership that is capable of been doing. And I guess that's the link to Francis, Pope Francis, and what he's saying.
Sure.
That you see at least a sympathetic mind at work.
Yes, sure. Definitely. There was really, I think, a very strong signal coming from the Pope about how the church needs to embrace the circumstances it's in, communities that it's serving.
It's a problem that many institutions face, and even though the focus is on the Catholic Church, you can see it in other church communities, but also in other government agencies, that agencies and institutions designed and starting off by travelling with eventually become ministering to. And that is when the sort of problem begins.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, all organisations develop a culture, and sometimes the culture can be removed from its founding vision. And you see that in anything. I mean, when you're running anything, you're meant to continually revisit the strategic plan, and that's usually based on a mission statement, and that's a whole set of values.
Lord save us.
Exactly. So you'll find that this is a moment when people will rethink and reimagine.
My last question about this is, and the reason I've asked this, is because this is a worldwide problem. What's happening in Australia is being reflected in the United States and in Ireland. So is the message going to be able to filter through to the Vatican?
Well, I don't know the workings of the Vatican.
Now, I'm asking you as a Catholic of long sort of patience and consideration and experience in the church.
There's no question, though, that the actions of the Vatican, certainly since about 2001 in this area, are much more concerted and engaged and recognising, if you like, the scope and the depth of the problem. But, you know, give our own church leadership its due. I mean, it's taking this on itself in a very wholehearted way. I mean, there's no but ifs here. I don't think anybody can argue the message hasn't sunk in. The real issue here is doing what it takes so that there is a sense for the broader community that we are dinkum about addressing not only the past, but also making what we currently do best practice. And there is an attitude of zero tolerance around this.
Francis Sullivan, it's been great to have you with us. We're going to finish with another tune you've selected. Another operatic favourite, O Mio Caro.
Yes, this is because I once heard it on an ABC in Perth one night, driving home from work. It was the last piece playing and I loved it. And I went home and my wife was there and she was being visited by a great friend of ours, and they were both pregnant, and it wasn't long till my wife was going to have our son. And two or three days later, we're in the labour ward, and just to sort of have a conversation, I said to her, Susie, I said, remember that, I told you about that song the other day on the radio, or the piece of music, and she's like, I really don't need to listen to this conversation right now. But anyway, this was it, and it's quite a moving piece, and it brings back those memories.
Francis Sullivan, thanks so much for joining us on Sunday night.
Thanks very much, John.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. You can download your favourite Sunday night interviews from our website at abc.net.au/Sunday Nights with an S. Thank you for listening.